This is Barbara Ridenour, returning with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated February 19th, 2016. We'll continue with the obituaries. Marilyn Eileen Cooper, 79, of Clinton, died Friday, February 16th, 2016. Services will be at 1 p.m. Saturday, February 20th, at the Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton. Burial will follow at Long Point Cemetery, Wapella. Visitation will be from noon to 1 p.m. at the Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton. Memorials may be made to the Arthritis Foundation. Helen M. Lundstrom, 81, of Lake Barrington, Illinois, formerly of Decatur, died Thursday, February 18, 2016. Funeral Mass will be at 10:30 a.m. Monday, February 22nd, in Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church, Decatur, with burial following at Fairlawn Cemetery. Visitation will be on Sunday, February 21st, from 3 to 6 p.m. in Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Home. Flowers may be sent to Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Home. Memorials may be made to Chapter KFPEO. Sarah Olmsted Vana, 78, died Tuesday, February 16, 2016. Memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. on Sunday, March 6th, in the fireside room of Grace United, 901 North Main Street in Decatur. Eileen White, 66, of Lovington, died Wednesday, February 17, 2016. Celebration of life services will be at 1 p.m. Monday at the First Baptist Church of Arthur. Burial will be in Keller Cemetery, Lovington. Visitations will be from 11 to 1 p.m. at the church. Memorials are suggested to the Lovington Ambulance Service. Reed Funeral Home Sullivan is in charge of arrangements. C.F. Clement Marley, 94, of Nokomis, died Wednesday, February 17, 2016. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. today at Steele Dawson Funeral Home in Nokomis, with a rosary prayer service at 4:30 p.m. Funeral services will be Saturday, February 20th at 11 a.m. at St. Louis Catholic Church in Nokomis. Burial will be in Calvary Cemetery. Steele Dawson Funeral Home of Nokomis is in charge of arrangements. Now we'll turn to the opinion page and continue with letters to the editor. Rauner union bashing hurts families, children. I wish Governor Bruce Rauner would get off his my way or the highway attitude. Does he not realize what shape this country is in without adding more worries? Oh, I forgot he doesn't care how many people or businesses he hurts as long as he gets his way. The only thing it seems he's worried about is busting unions. The only thing this will result in is more people on welfare and more crime. People are not going to let their kids go hungry, therefore more crime. While Rauner visited the schools, he said kids asked him what his favorite food was. They all didn't get to ask, so he told them to write, and he would answer their questions. If I remember, they were kindergarten children. I'm sure they don't know what a state budget is at their age. Maybe when these kids get hungry because Rauner's having or wanting his way, they could write him and ask if he could share his favorite food with them. He is hurting so many businesses and mainly people of all ages because he can't have his way about unions. I think maybe he should have all of his money, income, and anything dealing with making a decent living cut off. Maybe then he would get down to business. So what do you say, Governor Rauner? Forget about the union busting and get down to the important things. Signed, Patricia Boggs, Mount Zion. Decatur, chief decision is about what's right. Brad Sweeney did not shoot anyone. He did not take a bribe. He never failed to do his job. He was a good police officer. He believed in what was right. Because he was doing his job, he was fired. I would not know the former chief of police or city manager Tim Gleason if I passed them on the street. I just believe in what is right. Signed, Barb Edwards of Decatur. Excuse me. Dawson, this is an editorial, keeping political arguments civil. As an observer of social media discussions, it is more disheartening than ever to see the continual fighting that goes on when politics enters the room. It has been said that politics and religion are two subjects to avoid in polite discussion. This year they have become somewhat intertwined, but there is no doubt the heat is being generated mostly by politics, and it has become impolite, even virulent. A lot of dialogue and question amounts to stranger-on-stranger haranguing, but a good portion of it is friend versus friend. Sometimes it starts as banter but escalates into more. In fact, I am aware of at least two friendships that dissolved because a simple disagreement over who is best qualified to lead the country turned into a full-blown verbal Donnybrook. Thus, in 2016, we have reached a high level of ugliness in political discourse. My stomach and my head can't take much more, and we still have the meat of the season to go before the general election. It's going to be a long summer. So, what has happened that feelings have escalated to the point where people who have been friends for years end up tossing away the friendship because they can't come to grips with the fact that not everyone agrees with everyone on political issues? There used to be a time when discussions on public policy and issues were settled on the basis of facts. People read newspapers and magazines and listened to news shows to glean information on the topics of the day. You could take some faith that that information being provided came from a factual point of view and was credible. I think much of the disintegration of polite conversation began in earnest with the Internet. While the Internet is a wonderful thing, anyone who can log on to a computer can also figure out how to create a website and write a blog. Unfortunately, some of these people who do that write whatever comes into their head, and worse, end up being cited as sources in arguments, even though there's no established reason to give them any credence. Humor columnist Dave Barry used to famously claim, "I'm not making this up," when something seemed far-fetched. While this device gave him a certain believability, there are a slew of bloggers who could truthfully write, "I am making this up," with an implied, "and I don't care if it is borderline libelous." I've dealt in opinion for a long time, stretching back to when I started writing editorials in the 1980s. Those duties usually included editing letters to the editor. It was as I was learning to edit letters that I discovered how tricky it is to referee public discussion. I tried to be fair and held to the tenet that while it is okay to say someone has a stupid idea, it is not okay to say someone with a stupid idea is stupid. It's all about avoiding personal attacks. The distinction is a fine one, but it is an important one. Smart people can come up with stupid ideas. They can't all be gold. And even when people with a history of coming up with bad ideas will strike a good one now and then. But personal attacks are common, and as even the candidates are ready to wade into the fray. Keep civility in mind when discussing politics. Take a deep breath. Don't get angry. Above all, don't take it personally. Read, get some facts, and frame your own arguments. Be selective in the sources you cite, because not all are trustworthy. Remember, as Abraham Lincoln once said, you can't believe 95% of what you read on the Internet. Be careful out there, fact gatherers. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Thumbs up to the James Milliken Homestead, which is being lovingly restored to its 1880s style. The latest change that visitors will see is new stenciling painted on-site by Chicago artist Thomas Melvin, who has been associated with the project since 1994. The home's restoration has been overseen by Brigitta Kapp and her husband Lucian over the last two decades. The homestead hosts open houses on the last Sunday of every month, April through October. Thumbs up to the Decatur and Macon County Animal Shelter Foundation for its speed dating event over Valentine's Day weekend. The shelter held a $47 adoption fee special for the day on Sunday and gave those looking for a little pet love a chance to adopt. The Valentine's event, one of several held by the foundation, is one of the most popular adoption days. Thumbs up to County Market for hosting Healthy Eating Through the Aisles, a tour of the store dedicated to healthy eating. Hope Danielson, County Market's Director of Health and Wellness, gave a tour of the store and offered tips such as shoppers should spend more of their time in the produce aisle and avoid salt and sugar. Thumbs up to the Millikan University Wrestling Program, which put on a recent extravaganza. The event featured a match against Cornell College that was presented on stage at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center and also featured wrestling legend Dan Gable as a guest speaker. It was a great way to showcase the college wrestling program, which is in its first year. Thumbs down to the political sparring that began way too soon after the death of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Whether one agrees with Scalia or not, it's clear he was a historic figure on the court. He was a leader in pushing the originalist idea that the Constitution should be interpreted as written. The news of his death had barely been reported before both Democrats and Republicans were squabbling over whether President Barack Obama should nominate a new justice in the months he has left in office. Let's honor the justice before engaging in the political battles. Thumbs up to Lakeland College in Mattoon and Millikan University for a reverse transfer agreement that gives students working toward a college degree flexibility. The agreement allows credits completed at Millikan, a private university, to be transferred to the student's Lakeland transcript to complete requirements for an associate's degree at the public community college. Lakeland has a similar agreement with Eastern Illinois University, and Millikan and Richland Community College also have a reverse transfer agreement. Cruz's Supreme Court folly. The death of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia shocked Ted Cruz into a sudden realization. It's even more important than before that Ted Cruz be our next president. Because of the vacancy, he said, the Second Amendment, life, marriage, religious liberty, every one of those hangs in the balance. He warns that we cannot trust Donald Trump with this responsibility. We don't know what sort of person Trump would like for the court, but we do know what sort of person Cruz likes, and based on that knowledge, we can't trust Cruz by Cruz's own standards. Consider two justices who have elicited strong opinions from him. The first one is someone whose appointment he regards as a mistake, who in one landmark case changed the law in order to force that failed law on millions of Americans for a political outcome. The second is a principled conservative known for faithfully applying the Constitution and legal precedent. You may conclude that the Texas senator has a sharp eye for the right kind of justice and the wrong kind. Not quite. Both his praise and his condemnation were in reference to the same person, John Roberts. When Roberts was nominated in 2005, Cruz gushed over him. Today he regards the Chief Justice, who had the gall to uphold Obamacare, as part of an out-of-control court. Either Cruz was wrong before, or he's wrong now. It could be that Cruz is not very good at detecting what Supreme Court prospects are principled, which Supreme Court prospects are principled conservatives, or it could mean that he's good at picking them out, but clueless on what their approach will produce. Maybe Roberts is not a conservative, or maybe a conservative path doesn't always lead where Cruz wants it to go. However, it's hard to make the case that he's not a conservative. During the court's last term, Roberts voted the same way as Scalia 90% of the time, almost exactly as often as Clarence Thomas did. When Roberts voted to uphold Obamacare, it's possible he was being faithful to his principles at the price of offending his usual allies. That would be in keeping with what Scalia once said. Very often, if you're a good judge, you don't really like the result you're reaching. Republicans often act as though there's a clear, simple conservative approach to judging, which is to apply the words of the Constitution according to their original meaning. That's the mode of judging, known as originalism or textualism, that Scalia championed. But his approach never won over even most of his Republican-appointed colleagues, Roberts, Samuel Alito, and Anthony Kennedy, notes University of Chicago law professor Eric Posner in Slate, are not originalists. They don't go strictly by what the text was understood to mean when it was written, but decide cases the way justices always have, by using whatever materials at hand. Historical sources, yes, but also, and mainly, judicial precedents, common sense, general principles, political values, and so on. Nor does originalism necessarily tilt rightward. Liberals like Yale's Akhil Reed Amar and Jack Balkin embrace it. So did Supreme Court Justice Hugo Black, a hero of the American Civil Liberties Union. Scalia himself didn't participate all the time, or practice it all the time, sorry. He voted to strike down the law against burning the American flag, which he saw as a violation of the First Amendment right to free speech. But flag burning is not speech, only a form of communication, and the opinion joined by Scalia made no attempt to prove the framers thought it was. The more important fact, though, is that even staunch conservatives can reach drastically different answers to fundamental questions. Scalia wrote the decisions interpreting the Second Amendment to protect an individual right to own guns. But appeals court J. Harvey Wilkinson III, an undisputed conservative appointed by Ronald Reagan, said it is wrong to, quote, read an ambiguous constitutional provision as creating a substantive right that the court had never acknowledged in the more than 200 years since the amendment's enactment, end quote. Cruz promises that any justice he chooses will faithfully follow the law. But all justices think they do that. Roberts is a villain in Cruz's eyes only because he ruled in a way different from what Cruz wanted. It would be terrible justice, though, who would slavishly implement the desires of the president who made the appointment. If Cruz wants a justice who will always rule the way he prefers, he's chasing the wrong job. In the life section, Borderline heads back to the stage. When Tom Butts reminisces with the fellow members of the local 80s band Borderline, somehow they find themselves planning a reunion concert. Over the years, you talk to your buddies, and then we all come together for a show, he said. Butts and the original members of Borderline will be on stage again at the AIW Hall Saturday, February 20th. Opening band will be another reuniting band, Rocks Off, beginning at 7 p.m. Although members of Borderline are older, they still promise an exciting show. It's high-energy rock and roll, drummer Ty Wiedenkeller said. Borderline was known around Decatur for their renditions of classic rock songs and updated light shows. Borderline would play for hours with no breaks, Butt says. For the day, we had good sound and lights. The band were at their most popular in the early 80s. Their reputation often led to opportunities to open for well-known acts such as Steppenwolf and Greg Kine Band. Borderline disbanded in 1984 after 5 years of nonstop shows. One of the members decided to take a career, Wiedenkeller said. We are all parents now, grown-ups with kids. Today, most of the members of Borderline still play music, but with other groups and in other parts of the country. Guitarist Jeff Waddle formed his own band in Portland, Oregon, while Rusty Lake moved to St. Louis, Missouri, or St. Charles, Missouri. Both men will be traveling back to Decatur for the reunion show. We are going to be doing the same songs back in the day, Wiedenkeller said. Foghat, Ted Nugent, The Beatles. The music may be the same, but the show has been altered to fit the band and its audience. Instead of an all-night show, Borderline has shortened it to a couple of hours, and we have high-end sound and lighting, Butt said. Members of Borderline are expected to fill the venue with fans, but understand many from the old crowd have their limits. We got smart, Butt said. The show won't be so late. If you go, it's the Borderline reunion show at 7 p.m. Saturday, February 20th. At the AIW Hall, 2882 North Dineen Street, Decatur. Celtic Knights visits Decatur. St. Patrick's Day has come to Decatur a month early. The Irish production Celtic Nights, Spirit of Freedom will be on stage at 7:30 p.m. today at Millikan University, University's Kirkland Fine Arts Center. The show consists of vocalists, dancers, and musicians, all performing traditional Irish music from their homeland. The three musicians play multiple instruments, such as flutes, whistles, guitars, banjos, mandolins, and fiddles. The musicians cover a wider spectrum, said Karen Olleran, Celtic Knights bass baritone singer. Olleran and five other singers utilize their different sounds to create an Irish atmosphere. We are lucky they are quite individualized, he said. But when we sing together, we fit together quite well. The theme of the show is a celebration of the 100-year anniversary of Easter Rising. The Irish battle in 1916 was fought for Irish citizens to gain their independence. This is the recurring theme, Irish independence, Olleran said. All the music is telling the story. Although the show has a historical element, the audience will not need to know about Irish history. Olleran suggests the audience listen to the lyrics of the song. Some are sad, some are funny. We try to keep it lighthearted. The performers stay with Irish traditions and customs throughout the show, including the instruments. The Uilleann pipes create a sound common in Irish music. The instrument is similar to bagpipes, but is played with the elbow instead of the mouth. It is one of the most traditional Irish instruments, Olleran said. The show is a mix of Irish music throughout its history. The songs date back 200 years to the 1960s and current music as well. Decatur is in the middle of the show's national tour. January Trothber, director of Kirkland Fine Arts Center, is happy Millikan was able to attract a show of this size. We are extremely excited to do something this popular, she said. The show began in January, traveling to different venues all over the United States, and they will end their tour in April. After each show, the performers meet with the audience. Olleran finds this part of the show the most enjoyable. We could be standing with people for 45 minutes, he said. The people are so welcoming. If you go, it's Celtic Nights, Spirit of Freedom. It's at 7:30 p.m. today in Kirkland Fine Arts Center at Millikan. Tickets are $45, $35, and $25. Kane, OJ Revival results in flood of memories. Certain 20th century figures never fade away. We, or at least an appreciable number of we, can't get enough of them, can't get enough about them into our lives. John Kennedy, Richard Nixon, Marilyn Monroe, Princess Diana. They were all committed to plenty of newsprint and plenty of film. They've had so many films made about them. We all have our favorite portrayals of each. For the record, Bruce Greenwood in 13 Days, Dan Hedaya in Dick, Michelle Williams in My Week with Marilyn, none. Another individual has joined them, and the story of the 47th and 48th years of his life have been turned into a 10-part movie and become a television sensation. Three episodes of American Crime Story, The People versus O.J. Simpson, have been run on FXX. There's an unexpected mania about the show, giving further credence to the idea that the double murder of Simpson's ex-wife and one of her friends is an important societal marker, dividing observers by race, class, and degree of celebrity. Sounds like now, doesn't it? The movie series thus far has done a fine job recreating the mania surrounding the case, but can't even capture the full scope. The trial was broadcast live, unheard of before the time. Geraldo Rivera's star reemerged as he hosted a nightly recap of the trial on CNBC. Here's a fact that clearly shows how different the world was at the time. ESPN's just-launched website was bragging about 50,000 users a day. Today, it draws nearly five times that number daily. So, we didn't have the internet. As a country, we seemed to unite in watching a trial about a double murder, which, because it was, one, became a soap opera. The trial eventually became a show put on in front of the cameras. It was one of the first of what we now know as reality programming. The judge, the lawyers, the extended families were the regulators, the stars. They occasionally shared the stage with special guests, witnesses who received their brief moments in the spotlight. There were dozens of quickie books written about the case, the accused and the victims. One witness and one juror posed nude for Playboy and lived to see the day when Playboy stopped publishing photos of naked women. And none of them were immediately dismissed by an insatiable public. Mocked, to be sure, there was plenty to mock about the characters who starred in the trial, but it turned out the characters themselves had the share of contempt for the truth in the system, and their principal concern was trying the case in front of cameras, both in and out of the courtroom. Here's hoping the movie makes that clear and gives the entire story a little more context. That's owed especially to people who see the young Kardashian clan portrayed, apparently quite accurately. Those Kardashians were there for the birth of modern reality programming. In some ways, they couldn't help but become a part of it. We all have our obligatory Simpsons story. Mine is not of the time I spent watching the trial and Rivera's recap shows, my wonder and disgust growing daily, along with my inability to turn away. The night of the Simpson, A.C. Cowling's Los Angeles Police Bronco Chase, I was in the sports slot, the person responsible for organizing the section. To account for the Simpson case, I'd designated a story for an inside page. We needed to get pages out of the way rather than have 15 typesetting plates crowding through the system on a deadline. As the chase began, I found a story to replace the one we'd already put in, because the news was changing. Then, sports editor Mark Tupper was covering a softball tournament at Borg Warner Field. He was calling regularly to check on what was happening. As we watched the slow-motion Bronco chase with the NBA Finals in the corner of the screen, we realized the degree to which the story was changing. I'm not going to pretend we knew 95 million people were watching on television, but we knew it was getting a lot of attention in both places, as we were. While watching the second episode of American Crime Story, The People versus O.J. Simpson, which is exclusively devoted to the Bronco chase, I was taken aback at the final moments when Cowlings drove to the door of Simpson's Brentwood home. The vehicle sat without any movement for what felt like hours. I remember that moment as my feeling of terror. I said to Mark, "This cannot work out well. No matter what happens, it's bad." I didn't realize how far that statement would prove to be accurate beyond O.J. Simpson. Here are some calendar events. Chinese dance and music company Shen Yun performs at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois at Springfield, Wednesday, February 24th. Tickets for the 7 p.m. show are $112, $102, and $82 and are available at the box office. That's at www.sangamonauditorium.org or by phone, 217-206-6160. That's 206-6160. Or 800-207-6960. Grant Chapman, Amy Grant and Steve Curtis Chapman perform Thursday, February 25th at Bloomington's U.S. Cellular Coliseum. Tickets for the 7:30 p.m. show are $63, $45, and $35. Tickets are available at the box office and via Ticketmaster. Millikan University's Chamber Percussion Ensembles present the annual Synergy Concert Sunday, February 21st. The performance is at 4 p.m. at Kirkland Fine Arts Center. There is no admission charge. Luke Bryan performs tonight at the Peoria Civic Center. Little Big Town and Dustin Lynch are opening the acts for the 7:30 p.m. show. Tickets are $74.39 and are available at the box office or via Ticketmaster. And that's all we have time for this a Friday edition of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated February 19th, 2016. This is Barbara Ridenour. I look forward to reading with you again soon. Have a great weekend and great week to follow.